Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to CAGDU, Capture Area Guide Dog Users Inc. CAGDU show about your dog and you. And it's a show that tells you what is a guide dog, why you get a guide dog, when you get a guide dog, where you get a guide dog, and how you get a guide dog. And our special guest will be sharing some of his experiences and his perspective from using a guide dog. Again, this is CAGDU About Your Dog and You. And it is brought to you by CAGDU, Capital Area Guide Dog User Inc. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and my co-host, my engineer, my announcer, the hostess with the most is Miss Renee. And how are you today, Miss Renee?
Reverend Ray, I am sitting warm and snug inside my home, and I'm watching big, fluffy snowflakes come down here in the mid-Atlantic, and it's wonderful.
Now, Ms. Renee, in the black community, they say, are you throwing shade at me because I am at work? So, but it is comfortable, but I am at work. And you know, and speaking of being at work, I heard a statistic this morning on the news that say that I forgot how many million of people resigning from their jobs. They just don't want to work that 9 to 5, 4 to 8, all that anymore. And people, you know, unless they can work from home, they done got spoiled, they don't want to be going into the office and stuff. So that's the kind of jobs that people are looking for now. And then I understand they gave another statistic of how many people are starting their own businesses. And I think the average is $100,000 that people are putting their personal money in, because this COVID in the last 2 years have taught people a different life. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I can resonate with that, Ms. Renee, because I work for at large councilman in PG County, and I am the constituents, a liaison, and you know, and so we just started back to work in a new building, a beautiful building named after the first black county exec in Prince George County, Wayne K. Curry Building. So we just moved in this new building a couple of months, and we had a meeting, and you know, and they said COVID was doing a little better, so they want everybody to work at least 2 days a week, right? So I got my schedule. I work 3 days a week. Now, Ms. Renee, I get up at 4 o'clock now, have to take the dog out, have to take a shower, not to say I don't take one every day, have to take a shower, they take time, have to fix me a little lunch, you know, because they don't have as many places open like they used to, on your job site. Matter of fact, we have a beautiful cafeteria in the building here, but because we got that many people, the cafeteria not open, right? So you just got to get stuff out of the machine. All right, so then you have to come to work, what we call it here, Metro Access or Paratransit. So I got to go outside and stand outside, like you say, you in the house, stand outside in that cold, get on this transit. Then I have to drive me to work with all these, you know, crazy people and stuff. And then I have to, you know, go in the building. Then I have to, I have a beautiful office, though. I can't complain about that. All the accessible equipment I need, you name it, I got it. And then I have to take the dog out at least twice. And because you're in these buildings, that's like 3 blocks of walking the time I leave my office, go to the elevator, go downstairs, go out to the. And then because I have Zoom calls now, with all these people that gone Zoom crazy, nobody wants to meet in the place, so they got Zoom calls. So I have Zoom calls in the evening. And because I have Zoom calls in the evening, what is the point of me trying to get home at 4 or 5 o'clock, and then I got to jump right on Zoom calls? So I stay at work to have my Zoom calls so I don't get home till 9 o'clock. So, Ms. Renee, I'm figuring out what business I can start.
business, I would suggest that you find out whether or not they have therapy sessions as a benefit, because it sounds like you might have some serious issues. But COVID forced us to realign. It really did. And so people are looking at the quality of their life and what they want to do. But that's true.
I figured up how much money, even though we ride on paratransit, and our guests coming on know that in the talk, and know that, you know, we pay a small fee, but still, I was paying like over $500 a month, you know, all the riding around I had to do and everything. All right, and then, you know, buying lunch, you know, how much that costs, and then cleaners, every week I had to get cleaners clothes because the brother had to wear suits and look good and stuff, and had to get my boots shined and everything. So, Ms. Renee, I'm like, man, I see why these people don't want to be going to work. But anyway, get off my personal problems.
Yes.
Especially with the snow today in this area, which we call the DMV, that's the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia, then you're really looking at, well, do I want to do? But anyway, I better be a little quiet. My boss might hit me. Okay, so I love my job. All right, so next, Ms. Renee. So, as Jack and Lisa used to say in the 60s when he started the show, on and away we go. So, Ms. Renee, give us the rundown on our show today, please.
Well, away we go indeed. Well, we always begin with you talking about stop dogging us around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. And then we have a special guest today. People love technology when it works. And when it doesn't, our guest, Chris Myers, gets a call. His 15-plus years of telecommunication engineering skills have been put to use, including stints during Hurricane Katrina and the earthquake in Haiti. And today, he shares his professional and personal journey as a man with vision but limited sight. Back over to you for the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog.
All right. The good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog is brought to you by Real-Time Pain Relief. And that's one thing that people that got guide dogs, especially that first day that they get them and go up there and get them, they need this pain relief. So we're glad that they're one of our major sponsors. Because we need to put them on our ankles and wasn't enough that's falling down, our knees, our elbows, and some more stuff. So we thank them for being a longtime sponsor. Stop dogging us around. You know, I don't know another area, so we're checking. But in Walmart, in the Walmart stores, they have started selling service animal tags, and also I understand some kind of registration or certification they're selling. And these dogs and these animals are not trained, all right, and they're going to be walking around and stuff and all. So on my job here, being constituent services, and then I'm also the president of CAGDU, Captain Area Guide Dogs, in this area, which we have over 100 members in Virginia, Baltimore, Maryland, D.C. And so I've been getting nothing but phone calls, and I'll say, Razor, well, you work for a county councilman. What y'all want to do about it? We need to. So, of course, I had my secretary send out to all our members to call their state and local representatives and call Walmart and try to put a halt to this situation. So we're going to talk more on that, but that's just a situation with, you know, dealing with service animals. And last year in Maryland, we was able to work on the name of the bill, because I keep thinking a guy
harm
but
to
the name of the bill.
Animals.
Yeah, harm to service animals. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's one of the benefits of being in government that I, from my job, was able to get a delegate to put it through. Thank Ms. Williams for that, on the Senate side, and they put through, and Governor Hogan signed it on the 18th of May. Didn't have the teeth that we wanted in it, but at least we got started on it. But anyway, so we got to fight the fight with that situation, and that's just one of the bad things of used in the service dog, all constantly battering those kind of things. But and I'll guess I'll tell you, but when you put down what's the benefits of having a guide dog, and you put down on the other side what some of the drawbacks, you'll come out every time the benefits totally outweigh. Some of the drawbacks or inconveniences. And the other thing in the black community, there's always a joke with Richard Pryor when he said, "Man, stepping all on my feet, get off my feet." And they said, "Man, blind." He said, "Well, he need to get a guide dog then." Well, see, everybody cannot use a guide dog. and that was a joke in the black community of Richard Pryor. They would always say that. "Well, yeah, blind, he blind, he need to get a guide dog." Well, no, every very small percentage blind people have the capability or the desire to get a guide dog. And I forgot, I think it's only like 1,200 or 1,500 guide dog of the 15 different schools in the United States are using guide dogs. So anyway, it's not that easy. It takes a lot, and you'll hear from our guests some of the things that you have to go through and all. But that's it for the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. And it is brought to you, again, by Real-Time Pain Relief, the best smelling, most effective, real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on, and the pain is gone. Ms. Renee, back over to you and properly introduce our guest.
Well, I would be honored. Our guest, Chris Myers, gets a call when telecommunications does not work. He has been in the telecommunications engineering field for more than 15 years. And today he joins us on the Amtrak, or from the Amtrak. Welcome, Chris.
Hello, all.
Thank you very much for having me on your show today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for agreeing to be on our show today. A lot of people done heard about our show and stuff, and they said, "Man, it's really fun and interesting and stuff like that." And I don't want to be a victim again, but no, we take care of our people. But thank you, Chris, for very much being on it. And we try to do three things before the show end. We like to hope that we can inform people, that we can give some inspiration to people, and sometimes they say too much entertain people. So thank you very much for being on the show. So tell us just a little bit about who Chris Myers is, and then we'll work up to the other thing.
Well, let's see. Who Chris Myers is? Well, he's an entrepreneur, quite a character, 5'6", incredibly handsome. He's a person with albinism, and currently, he got out of I guess you could say the technical arena for a bit, working with the government. Retired from that and went entrepreneur on him, but then he got back into radio, and that's where he is today, traveling on the Northeast Amtrak, somewhere between Delaware and Pennsylvania.
Now you in travel because of what? Why are you traveling right now?
Well, actually, it was supposed to be for work. We were traveling a training event that was supposed to be held tomorrow.
Okay, Chris, let me come back to you. You already know this when you hear the music that you have to take a break because Reverend Ray has to go and pay some bills, pay people like Ms. Renee and other people that I don't know, why they, since they heard about Amazon, they want to start a union and they want to know when we're going to have the next meeting. And so anyway, because of that, I have to pay for bills. So we're going to bump out and come back on the other side with our very special guest, Mr. Chris Myers. All right, Ms. Renee, take it away.
You are listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We're located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for guide dog users everywhere. Back to our host, Reverend Radio Razor, and the 5'6", handsome Chris Myers.
Now, when we post this on our website, you will put that on the blurb, the 5'6". So, about your travels today on a Friday? So this is for business pleasure or what?
Well, it was originally for business, but the meeting that I was supposed to go to has gone virtual, as you were saying, with everything no longer in person. We're always virtual. So rather than cancel all of my travel, I'm like, well, I'll just go visit some family in New York. So right now I'm running as quickly as I can from the snow.
They're getting snow too, Chris. I'm sorry to inform you. I just saw the weather report. You're heading to the heart
right
of it.
Right back into it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
minor technicalities.
So saying New York family. So Chris, where did you grow up and where your family
well, originally
from?
Well, originally I'm from Florida. I was born in Southern Florida, and I attended the School for the Blind in St. Augustine, Florida, and my family lived 3 hours away. So I pretty much grew up at the School for the Blind from kindergarten to sixth grade, and then I was able, due to inclusion in 504, I was able to transfer from the School for the Blind back to public school and graduated in 95 there in Vero Beach, Florida.
Oh, Floridian. Oh, okay. All right. So, Mr. Nag, okay, so now you got some questions from Brother Chris.
Well, I do. Chris, so when did you begin to lose your sight, and can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I was born with oculoptosis albinism, or OCA 1A, and because of that was my diagnosis, sensitivity to light, visual cortex misrouting, nystagmus, all sorts of fun visual words that us, you know, in the blind community know. And so that's where I had. And in public school and kindergarten in the school system's like, we don't have services for him. That's where I moved my blind skills, I guess, from the school, learned Braille until about the second grade. And then they came up with this device called a monocular. And at second grade, I moved from Braille into the print world and was able to correct my left eye, which is 2800. But I always refer to my right eye just balances my head out because it doesn't do anything.
Your email address uses the word albinism. Is that a conscious decision just to get it out there?
No, it was not. It was like when I got the phone, they're like, well, you need a special email address for your phone. And I just like threw that together thinking that I would never get stuck with it, of course. Right? So and then I realized that it's just so much easier to write on that email address for your phone than it is to give out your personal email address all the time. So it just kind of stuck.
Right. Right.
Oh,
now,
wow.
You talk about attending school from sixth grade on. Sometimes children are not kind to children who are different in any kind of way. How did you cope with being a little bit different? Because albinism isn't really a disability. It's just the description, isn't it?
Well, it's a genetic disease, and it's actually that's how it's defined by the National Institute of Health. But with that genetic disorder comes all sorts of issues such as lack of pigmentation, which really comes back to the whole eye because the lack of pigment in the eye itself is what causes this photosensitivity and the nystagmus. Because of all that light bombarding the eye, it eventually in time, if not protected, damages the visual cortex and causes other internal kind of eye issues that even affects your vision even more. So, growing up in Florida, my parents didn't know that you shouldn't take your albino child and leave him in direct sunlight. And it took a while to determine that with the doctors explaining to him about, you know, he needs to wear sunglasses and kept away from bright lights and things. And that was the transition. And your original, like, comment about kids, actually wasn't my first week in kindergarten in public school that I realized I was different. Up until that point, I didn't know that I was different from the other kids. And it was a young girl who came up to me and said she wouldn't play with me because I was a ghost. And I went home like totally, crushed by that. I didn't understand and asked Mom. And then that's when I found out about the whole deal. So.
Well, you know, I learned more about it as I was doing the research. Now this is an etiquette question. How can a person who is sighted refer to a person who is visually impaired And how does one learn their preferences and how they are referred? Blind, low vision, visually impaired?
It gets into the whole political correctness, really, and what people prefer and how they describe themselves. A lot of times I refer to myself as sighted with assistance. There's the most common medical term is low vision, but what is low vision? I mean, you can't classify low vision. When you see somebody with low vision stumble on the sidewalk, you don't realize that, you know, they can't see.
Right.
That's why they stumble, not that they're clumsy. So there's a tough definition between what is low vision and, you know, what is clumsiness at that point. So I think the current political terminology is sided with, no, what is it, sensory deprived. And I just don't, I can't get behind that. But sensory deprived, that just makes no sense to me. So I don't see why it's...
Is it politically correct to ask someone how they would like to be referred to?
I think in today's age, I don't think it's an issue. I think it's kind of become acceptable. In that realm of how do you want to be identified? You kind of notice when you ask me how to describe me, that's not something I use as a description. You know, a person with albinism. A person who's blind or visually impaired. That's who I am, and the character of the person who I'm. You know, but it's not a. As you can tell, we've pulled into Philadelphia. In case your listeners are wondering. I don't think if most people who are blind and visually impaired, if they've had the proper education in growing up, that they wouldn't be offended by it. I think it's more offensive when you make a comment about somebody who is stumbling on a sidewalk and you say, what are you, blind? And I think that's more offensive than asking them if they need help because they can't see.
That's a good point. Excellent point. Rev, you wanted to jump in there.
I want to go back to about when you said about your mother and them knowing about how to handle your visual problem. So do you have any siblings, and do any of them have any eye condition?
No. I have a younger brother who I'm going to visit right now in New York. He does not have any vision problems. He's actually a New York police officer.
Oh, yeah, he needs to see to be able to be beating them people with them sticks and stuff. Yeah, you're right,
okay.
Billy Cub. You're right.
Chris, let me get us back on track. What motivated you to get a guide dog?
Well, that's an excellent question, isn't it? Well, I tried an experimental surgery at John Hopkins. No, I'm sorry, not John Hopkins, Children's in Philadelphia. And it was what was referred to as null point surgery. And the surgery was not successful. It took what vision I had and made it even a bit worse. And we were hoping to get maybe like two or three lines out of it, and we regressed. And I became more dependent, you know, upon people at that point, and I didn't particularly care for it. I was a great cane traveler. You know, I did a wonderful job with the government, but with that loss of sight, it made things a little bit more difficult that, to be honest, I didn't really want to ask for help. In regards to you know, doing my job, and I felt that because of the amount of sight that I had lost, that it'd just be best that I not continue in that realm. That probably wasn't the greatest decision because I loved what I do. You know, it was like your dream job, if you would, kind of like Mr. Renee there. But you know. As far as the whole telecommunications, you know, I started out in radio when I was 9, so I always knew that would be the facet that I would be into. And with radio, I learned radio is a great equalizer when it comes to blindness, and that people do not know that you're blind because all they do is hear your voice and how you handle their call. And,
right.
And that's really my drive was to be a 911 dispatcher, and of all things, I completed my training at the Daytona Rehabilitation Center when they had a blind program there, and I got my emergency medical dispatch certification, and I went to apply for a job in the state of Florida, and come to find out, you couldn't be a dispatcher in the state of Florida if you didn't have a valid driver's license. And it was a crushing blow to me. I'm like, I've done all this training. I was a volunteer in the emergency services. I was able to do radio, and it was basically you're good enough to volunteer but not good enough to be paid, and I was crushed by that.
Wow. Oh, I can only imagine. I can imagine. Well, okay, so take us back to getting a dog. So not having a driver's license and being able to do the job you love, so you opted to get a guide dog. Were the two related at all?
It was, because my support network that I depended on was, as I found out, work-related. And once I no longer had that work relations, I lost my support network. And I still wanted to do things, but I had moved away from family and friends, you know, them being all in Florida. And I was at the time in Washington, D.C. So that was kind of the transition point that when I retired, I started researching the possibility of a guide dog and if it would be the right choice for me. And I spoke to a few friends with guide dogs and talked with them. I had actually tried a guide dog out when I was in college, meeting with a Southeastern guide dog school. And at that time, I was, again, dependent on people, and I just didn't want to go that route. But in 2015, I kindly said, yep, this is going to be the way to go, because it gives me more independence, and I don't have to rely on people to get me to where I need to go. So.
Okay. So how did you decide on a school?
Well, it was quite a bit of research. One factor was a lot of the schools, you know, you train in person at their school. And that was kind of like, well, I'm never, ever, ever going to be in that city or that town. Why do I want to train in an area that I'm not even familiar with? And so I was kind of hung up on that. I didn't mind the traveling concept, but I just didn't want to do that. And I found a few schools that had trainers, you know, hometown trainers, where the school will come and train in the town you live in. And that's really what I was interested in. So I went with Freedom Guide Dog School out of Utica, New York. Fiona, my guide dog, a yellow lab, who's sitting here at my feet, who happens, by the way, to love riding on trains, is just amazing. And Tim Kane was her trainer. And like I said, she's from Utica, New York. She is 5 years old, been together for about 3 years and a month now.
So is she your first guide dog?
Quasi first. Yeah, I would call her my first official. There's, like I said, a stint with Southeastern, it was never really assigned to me. It was just kind of an introduction, but this is, I would call Fiona, yes, definitely the first in that case.
Wow. Okay. Is it everything you thought it would be?
And more. It's like the Maserati.
Yeah.
Yes.
I gotcha. Yeah, it must be anytime you've got me. I'm on my number 7th guide dog, and I had all shepherds. And anytime you and none of my guide dogs have their own Facebook page.
well, now, to be honest, Fiona has her own Twitter. Is it Twitter? No, Instagram. Yeah, Fiona has her own Instagram account. You can follow the adventures of Fiona on Instagram. I think it's like Fiona Radio Dog. I think it is.
We just
post things too. She has followers. They love her. So
I can imagine.
Fiona underscore radio underscore dog. That's it. Yes.
We'll check it out, because I do another radio show called Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk, and I have a segment on there called The Adventures of Reverend Ray and the German Shepherd CNI dog, Miss Raven, that dog's a wonder. and we have a real good sponsor, Dog Food Pet Store. Okay, that's the money coming out Reverend Ray's pocket when you hear that music. So, Miss Renee, take it away.
Thank you. We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in the Tacoma Park neighborhood of Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they more than likely have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, and that's the District, Maryland, and Virginia. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. 3434. And back over to Reverend May and our guest, Chris Myers.
Oh, so Mr. Chris, now you have a guide dog. How did your friends and family all take to that? Because in the black community, black people ain't crazy about dogs. Even though they have dogs, they don't look at them like white people do, that they hug the dog, kiss the dog, put in the bed with, you know, black people don't do that. They just have them for status. So how did your family and friends react to Fiona?
You know, actually pretty well. And it's funny you say that, because a lot of times my girlfriend will walk with us, and she will comment about that, about, you know, how black citizens will walk up and they'll see Fiona. They'll go to the other side of the street, the pastor, to the other side of the public. They don't want anything to do with Fiona. And she's like the most lovable. She's like, so like everybody's like, she's got a sweet face and she's such a happy dog. She's walking along, wagging her tail. My mom, actually, she was like, well, it's about time. That was kind of her response. It was actually kind of segue. Mom became a vision teacher in my school district. So because of her doing that and changing her career path was one reason I was allowed to come back to public school in sixth grade. So it was because of her. So she kind of just let me do my own thing when it came to camp. And when I originally was talking about a dog, and that I didn't really want the responsibility or the upkeep, you know, the maintenance, and I thought that I could, you know, do it on my own. And then when I told her, hey, I'm thinking about this, what do you think? She goes, well, it's about time.
now you mentioned your girlfriend. And I don't want to throw any names out. Is the one that we hear on the phone sometime when we have the meetings during the month? Is that the same one or a different one? Oh, okay, Carol.
Same one.
Carol,
well, that's
right?
An indelible question to ask on the air.
I mean,
well, we can always edit. You know that.
You're absolutely correct. I am handsome, but no, I don't have one in every zip code. No.
So Chris, so she is sighted then she sighted? Carol is sighted?
Yes, actually she is sighted.
I did not realize that. Okay. But, all right, Mr. Maybe,
you know,
go ahead.
And you asked about how things went along, and it was kind of interesting because I had no idea that she was jealous. And when I got the dog, I noticed there was a little rift between her and the dog, because there were things that, you know, she would walk with me and do. Now Fiona and I would just roll out of the house, honey, we'll be right back. And she got a little tiffed about that for a while. I actually had to call my trainer and like, hey, this is the situation. He's like, it happens to everybody. It's okay, buddy. So, and I thought, well, I definitely want to keep the dog, but I'm not sure about the girl.
Chris, I often say on this show, if you put your girlfriend or your wife and your dog in the trunk of your car for an hour, when you open it up, who's happy to see you? And I have not got Miss Renee yet to get in that trunk with Raven to see who'd be the happy person to see me. So, yes, I do understand what you mean.
Okay, we've gone off the rails, and I mean that only figuratively,
I'm sorry.
Not literally.
I hope not. I was going to say, I'm on the train, so we certainly don't want that.
Right, exactly.
Chris, let me try to get us back.
Back, okay.
Now, you currently run the board at Cumberland Broadcast. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm the morning newsman at WCBC Radio. So I do like news, weather, sports. Well, actually, I don't really do sports. I just do special reports. I absolutely hate sports. That's a visual thing.
It's
really interesting because I was going to ask you about that. Now tell our listeners what an engineer does for the communication that we take for granted.
Well, primarily we like operate the console, if you would, and bring up the phone calls and all the awesome work that Ms. Renee here does. But, you know, we bring in the commercials, the bumper music, and we make the show lively and we keep it on track and we make sure that the on-air talent doesn't run away with stuff. So that's pretty much the overall operation of it. Some of the technical stuff, I mean, my station owner discovered that I'm an engineer, so now I'm fixing things at the same time I'm trying to keep us on the air, which doesn't always work out for me, but he's happy with it. But I'm on when you were talking about mornings, like Fiona and I are up at 2:30 in the morning. We get to the station at 3, and we're on the air at 5:45 to about 10, and then we get home at about 11 after we make all our stops. So, and then she's like,
"What were the areas that you said that you do weather, and what were the other areas?"
I'm sorry, say again.
You actually do an actual show, or you're engineering?
Well, we do the news. Yeah, we do the actual news. So at the top of the hour, I'll come out of ABC News, and I'll do about 6 minutes of local news and weather. And then Dave does his show, and then at 30 past, I'll do an updated 6 minutes of news and weather and kind of repeat that on the hour, unless something special happens. Like after I left today, they have what we call Snow Watch. So all the schools decided they were going to start closing. So fortunately, I left before that started. Those are all special reports. I use a device called Orcam that reads the material to me. That's why I have to get to work so early. I allow that device to read it to me. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Orcam. No, I'm in negotiation right now with my boss about getting the Orcam. So tell me I know a couple of people have them. You're the third person I know that have, if you have one. And so tell me what your experience with it.
You know, I'm incredibly happy with it, and I actually have a modification to mine, an additional thing called headlines. So you can tell it basically to read the newspaper headlines, and it will read the large, bold headlines from the newspaper instead of reading me every single story, because I may not care about the sixth story, but maybe it's the seventh story that I want to carry. So it'll read me the headlines, and then if I like it, I'll stop it and tell it to read, you know, that story, and it'll read me that story. And it's been really good. I got to tell you, between that and the monocle device I use, without either of those devices, I wouldn't be able to pull the job off. But it's a great device to have, and I strongly encourage it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say another great thing is that it's Bluetooth enabled. So I've been about taking it out of work because I depended on it so much. But when Carol says we're going to a nice restaurant, I'll bring it along and use an earbud, and I can have it read me the menu instead of having Carol read the menu to me. And that's been kind of a nice, you know, kind of additional cool thing that, you know, once again, you've got the ability to read things, and it'll do the same thing for any signage that you're trying to read, like on a bulletin board. You can point it at it, and it'll read it back to you.
So Miss Carol really feeling like, you know, she's being replaced, huh?
That's what I've told her. She's not replaceable. You can't replace perfection. That's what I keep telling her.
Let me write that down right under BS. I'm writing that down right under BS right there. Okay, go ahead.
Chris, I was fascinated.
Wednesday's coming up. There you go.
I was fascinated by something in your resume, and it says you were providing communication support during Katrina and in Haiti. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, actually, it's interesting that, as I mentioned before, my love was to be a 911 dispatcher, but the hurdle that I ran into, I couldn't do it. And I did a lot of volunteer work, and my volunteer work got noticed by the state of Florida during some disaster responses, and that work got noticed by the federal government. And the government came to me and asked me to put together a communications program with what was then called the National Disaster Medical System on a disaster medical assistance communications officers. So I completed all of the necessary training, and I was become deployable. And it had some hurdles because, again, you know, you're in an EMS fire ER doctor environment, and they see you with your visual impairment and don't think you can do the job. But then they realize this guy's got his stuff because he's got all the frequencies and everything he needs to know in his head. And when it comes to aligning satellite equipment, it's all tone-driven. It's not visual at all. And I, of all sad things to say, I got associated with what's called a mortuary response team, which occurs like for an event that requires a mass casualty incident. And under that program, under DMORT, because working around our victims wasn't an issue to me because I didn't see them. And a lot of communications people, they're office people. They work in a 911 center or, they work in an office environment. They're not field personnel. They don't, they're not hands-on. They're not boots on the ground people. And I did not have that hurdle. And so that became my skill set and work in that environment. And it was a big need. So when it came to Katrina, I was actually originally deployed to Mississippi for the first 2 weeks. And because of the communications meltdown in Louisiana, I was transferred from Mississippi to Louisiana to subsidize the command and control group. And it's kind of like a force multiplier, as we call it. And I excelled at it. And actually, I was deployed there for 16 months, which held the department's record for the longest deployed person. It's what I was good at, and I loved it. And the same thing came with Haiti. I was not on the original strike team Haiti for the situation. I came in about 20 days after the earthquake to maintain the communications and keep it running until the end of mission, which was April 1st of 2010.
Wow.
Okay, so you're also a member of the Maryland Response Medical Reserve Corps. Is this a way for you just to keep your skills up?
Yes, it is. It was created during the COVID-19 pandemic for, again, mass casualty vaccinations. And I've been deployed a few times with the group, with Maryland Response, and most of it's been COVID-19 testing at the test sites to simply help with logistics and minor communications. They don't really have the communication infrastructure requirement that like a mobile hospital would need. So, but I've been supporting that role with the Allegheny County Health Department. I guess our COVID clinics went online back in October when we started testing of 2020.
Okay. Now you're also a part of the Allegheny County Amateur Radio Club operators. How does all of that fit into all of these deployments and other things that you do and your love for broadcasting?
Well, actually, amateur radio is where it all started. And that's back, again, working at the – well, being a student at the School for the Blind, we had radio club. And the radio club had a CB radio that we monitored emergency channel 9 on top of shortwave radio receivers. And that's where I got my hook on radio was being a CB channel 9 operator where people would call for help, and we would take the call there at the school and pass it on to Coast Guard or police. And from there, the instructor was an amateur radio operator, and he got me hooked into shortwave radio. I got my amateur radio ticket when I was 15, and that's again where my volunteer work with coordinating disaster response communications in Florida, where we had wildfires, hurricanes, tornadoes. That's where the state of Florida kind of noticed this young man out of Vero Beach who was, coordinating mutual aid things for volunteers, and they wanted to replicate that same thing at a state level.
Wow.
That is interesting.
That is really
impressive.
Really...
Yeah,
and
I didn't know
if
you were
that there. If that wasn't enough, you're also a member of the Maryland Association of Blind Merchants. Reb,
yes.
I think this is your field.
So you are a member now. So you're a member of the Merchants Division of Maryland.
Yes, we are. We have a small shop in Cumberland, Maryland, and it was kind of it was all based on a building that we purchased, and the building had so many potentials, and we're still working on the building. It was built in 1844. And one of it had a commercial component that we could turn into a shop. And, I was talking with my girlfriend about what to do with it. And she's like, I've always wanted a craft store. And I was like, all right, poof, done. And so we turned it into a craft store. And she is the artistic talent of the operation. I do everything else, like the logistics of paying bills and making sure everything works, inventory. Did I mention paying the bills?
yes.
That's a particular sore spot with Rev. And just because you said that.
Okay, but we're going to go. But when we come back on the other side, Chris, I want you to tell me is the store open now during the pandemic, and you know how you all doing that and what you're doing, and give me a little about that. And you say you're part of the merchant division, so is that the one where Melva Taylor is the president?
Yes.
Okay, that's my girl. So we're gonna come back on the other side, Miss Renee.
Okay, this is for Reverend Ray to pay me more money. You are listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. CAGDU is Capital Area Guide Dog Yuzu. And our guest is Chris Myers. Not only is he handsome, he's smart. Reverend Ray, take it away.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so you're part of the merchant. I thought I heard your name before. Yeah, me and Melba, boy, we've been friends since 1988. We met at an organization called Majestic Eagles, and I did a radio show. That's when I did my first got into radio, 1988, with Mr. John Ray and Mel, and we had a business, and they had an organization called the Majestic Eagles. And so they asked me to co-host with this young lady at the business meetings every Saturday. And it turned out to be Melba Taylor. And that's how I got to know her. And we've known each other ever since. And she's one of my number one people, right, that I can count on when I need anything. So tell me about the store. Is it open now because of COVID and, you know, all of that kind of jazz? Where you all get your stuff from, your merchandise, if people make it, or you all commercial? Or tell me about that.
Well, we opened actually 2 days just before the governor of Maryland closed all non-essential businesses. So it takes a really special entrepreneur to open a shop in the middle of a pandemic. I know, right? So that kind of hurt for a little bit. But then when non-essential businesses were released and we could reopen, we did so. I want to say it was maybe July, August of 2020. And we have been open. A lot of localized requirements with the health department, you know, as far as disinfecting workspaces and cleaning, wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
I can't compete with a conductor, but just for the record, I'm not sure if I'm your first coast, but I think we've traveled through 3 states so far. we're just coming into Jersey right now.
Oh,
okay. Travel show.
Yeah,
travel show. So as far as like, yes, we're open. We are closed this weekend due to snow. We've made it a policy that if it's raining or snowing, nobody really wants to shop, so we close for those purposes. But the shop is normally open, and we make everything in house. That's one of our that's kind of our core thing. That everything we put out, there was also a component that we would do makerspace. Basically, you could come in and work on your own scrapbook page, woodworking, sewing. But those components are classes we haven't been able to really pull off due to COVID right now. The insurance is just too high to allow it to happen. So we're sticking right now on the retail side, and we are dabbling our toe in the possibility of selling online. We haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, but it's something we're considering.
And that's what I was going to ask you, did y'all have an online presence?
We have a website. We have a website, craft-table.com.
Mr. Nate,
you can kind of see the store.
Take that down, because we can get stuff from there,
too. Craft-table.com. And you can – I know we have a Facebook presence as well as a Google presence, but you can also see Miss Fiona. She's part of the staff there, so she's there in full staff. Yeah, and I think that covered all the store questions. Yeah,
that's good, because we always looking for blind persons and persons with disabilities that have their own business before we can promote them, and also purchase things items from them to give away as door prizes and stuff. So we will, Mr. Nate,
absolutely
will check it.
And I do believe you were one of the recipients from the conference.
Is that where the Christmas wreath came from?
Yes, it is.
Miss Renee have it hanging out there outside.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Gorgeous.
She loved it.
That. Thank you so much. Yeah, it is beautiful. It is beautiful.
Ah.
Chris, we are running out of time, but I've got two questions I've got to ask you. What lessons has your work life taught you? And then after you answer that, I've got a follow-up.
Lesson my work dog has taught me. When she stops, that means that I'm supposed to stop and not tell her to keep going.
No, Chris,
a lot of times...
work life.
Oh, my work life. I'm sorry, my work life.
Yeah, we know about that dog.
She's awesome. She's like, you're talking about me, Dad. I feel her tail. So, work life. Do what you love. That's really it. Do what you love. If broadcast engineering is your love, do it. Don't let people say because of your disability that you can't. There is enough technology and enough people who are trying that shouldn't hold you back. You should be able to do what you love, and it's nothing more better than just being paid to do what you absolutely love to do.
I love that philosophy. And do you have any favorite stories that you can share from your work life?
And this is a family show, unfortunately, but go ahead.
Any special stories to share from my work life? I can't think of any right now that come to mind.
Well, what about with Fiona? Anything interesting in your travels with
other
Fiona?
Other than one of the things she currently does is sleep on her head, which I've checked on. I'm not sure if that causes any doggy brain damage, but she likes to sleep on her head with her paws in the air. I know, right? It's the weirdest thing.
Let me share this story with you, and this is for Carol, so you can convey this to her. Reverend Ray and I didn't date very long before we were married, and I had never lived with an animal. And I asked him, I said, well, what if I find out that I'm allergic? This is after we were married. And I said, what if I find out I'm allergic to the dog? And there was a three-second pause, and he said, I'll miss you.
Well, Chris, I understand how we feel about these dogs. Like I said, the good, the bad,
right,
the ugly.
Right.
You put down all the good side, the benefits. Well, Chris, I from the first time I heard you when I joined the NFB, and what, tell us a little bit about that before we hang up, the NFB Maryland, Western Maryland, that you're the new president. Just tell us a little bit about that,
yes,
please.
Well, basically, our former president passed away, and she did everything for the chapter. She was, she held all the responsibility, so there was just no transfer of responsibilities or information. So our current president, Rhonda Hoffman, of the National Federation of Blind of Maryland, approached me about what I consider being the president of the Western Maryland chapter. Well, at the time, it was the Greater Cumberland chapter. And I'm like, yes, but here's some things I want you to think about before you ask me to do it. And one was to rename it and to increase its geographical coverage to include areas that weren't being served at all. And she was all for it. And we've been on a recruiting drive. We've been operational for about 5 months now. On a recruiting drive, we're building the chapter. Western Maryland chapter does have a Facebook presence. And it's doing really well.
Good. And as a disclaimer, I am a member of the chapter, and they meet. When you meet Chris, and if people want to join in, how do they do that?
Absolutely. We meet the first Saturday of the month at 10 in the morning. We keep run typically short meetings. We don't hang out for a whole lot of time. So we get to the point, get the business done. And if you're interested in joining the chapter, or if you'd like to attend one of the meetings to see if it's for you, you can go to the nfbmd.org page and look up Western Maryland chapter. My contact info is listed there. And you can send us the info, and we can send you the link for the meeting. We meet virtually over Zoom the first Saturday of the month.
And then there page or someplace on there where you can join to become a member?
Yes, there is. Again, that's through the NFBMD, National Federation of Blind of Maryland.org. And you can pay your chapter dues there. Become a
okay,
member,
Mr.
as
Mr.
well
Renee,
as affiliates.
Write that. Okay, Ms. Renee, write that down. Because remember, you was looking for that particular to pay something. You were looking for that website.
National. I think that was the point he was making, and then you're referred to the chapter.
No,
yeah,
is that
if
the
you
same
go to
website?
NFBMD.
Yeah, MD. MSBMD
for Maryland.
Back,
yeah. Org.
Okay, and then you can go, oh, okay, all right. Well, Chris, I really appreciate this. Thank you. Thank you so, so much. And give a pat to Miss Fiona and a hug to Carolyn. And whatever order you want to do that in, that's up to you. Okay, so thank you, Chris.
She heard her name there. She's flapping her tail. She heard her name. Hey, Reverend Ray and Miss Renee, thank you so much for having me on the program today.
Always been fun. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So, Ms. Renee, before I do my thing, do you have any comments to make?
No, I just think it was a great interview. We learned so much. She has a wide range of interests. And I think the parting words that he left us is so important. Do what you love. And figure out how to do it in spite of any limitations.
And how to get paid for doing it.
And how to get paid. Very important.
Speaking of, today is payday for Ms. Renee and them, so they do get paid today. All right, Ms. Renee, so I am going to close with my usual. So you've been listening to CAGDU, Captain Urya, God, Dog, Users. And please go to our website with Mr. Nate will give you. We're always looking for new members. So my time is up. I thank you for your time. Until the next time, I am Reverend Ray. And I want to say I might not have sight, but I can have vision. But always remember, okay, that you can hug your honey, but pet your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
You've been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and Food, Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We're located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is CAGDU2020@gmail.com. That's C-A-G-D as in David, U, 2020@gmail.com. You want to listen to this show again or a past show? Go to our website, CAGDU.org, and click on the radio show button. Or call us at 301-263-7371. Thanks for listening.